Mr. Atkins, Reel 2. We should say that this was the 2nd Battalion of the West Surreys.
Yes, yes, it was. It was the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's Royal Regiment.
And in what capacity were you serving? As an honorary rifleman?
No, at that stage I'd become an MT driver, having gone through an instructional course under the MT sergeant. I was taught to drive the motor transport of those days, and I went out there as an MT driver.
What was the motor transport then?
Motor transport within the infantry regiment at that time consisted basically of the Morris 1500 weight vehicles, some little Austin 7s, some carriers, which I think at that time bore the name of Carden Lloyds. There may have been some heavier transport, but I can't remember too much, except that when we got to Palestine, we then definitely had vehicles of what weight we used to refer to as 30 hundredweight vehicles, six-wheel jobs, etc.
What kind of duties did the unit take up once you got to Tulkarm?
Once we got to Tulkarm, they were the normal type of operations where the unit would receive information that bandits or troublesome people, either in a village, a Jewish area or an Arab area, were prominent, and the battalion was given the go, the word to get out and go and sort it out, and you went out. I think it probably takes the form of search and destroy, in as far as weapons and ammunition and dumps were concerned. And also the gathering in of all the male personnel, and then they would be brought in front of a board of army officers and civilian and the Palestine police, as they were at that time, and they were asked to provide their identification cards or whatever the papers they were supposed to carry, so that they could eventually whittle out as to whether these people that were they were looking for were there or not. We used to call it oozling exercises, that gives you the idea. We called them oozling.
What was an oozle?
That's a very difficult question. I never know where the word came from. In my story that I wrote, the word oozling, I don't know where it came from, but the reason I remember it is because the regiment at that time found that the type of uniform and dress that we had to go on these oozling exercises was not practical. And they hit on the idea of sewing together the canvas jacket and trousers that we were issued with into a sort of combination overall. And the word oozling suit was dubbed onto them. And that's how I always remember the name, the oozling.
Can you describe any specific incidents that happened when you were on these oozling exercises?
From my own point of view, nothing very particular, nothing outrageous, nothing brave, nothing outstanding. It was a question of going out. You would leave your base at any time. It could be in the middle of the night, the early hours of the morning, or by day, and be as far as the MT drivers was concerned, which was where I was more closely concerned. Our job used to be to draw up the transport into a convoy along the road. The troops would disembark and would march away to carry out an encirclement of the village that they were told to go to, and then proceed with the operations. The MT remained on the road in convoy, and we were responsible for the protection of that transport whilst the troops were away into the hills. You could be on an exercise like that any time, anything from one day to 3 days and nights before you returned to billets, depending on the success or the difficulty of the operation. But basically, we being an MT driver, we were there to get the troops from A to B and make sure the transport was always available wherever we were told to go to bring them home.
What did these people who were rounded up look like, and how did they behave?
Oh, they were the normal run-of-the-mill. In our cases, it was mostly to do with the Arab nation, the Palestinian Arabs. I think as soldiers, we loved them. We thought they were very friendly. They chatted to you. And the British soldier, being what he is, he will get on with anybody, any foreigner, given his ability. He can't speak the language, but he'll make himself understood somewhere or another. And they pick up little smatterings of the language, enough to say hello, or if they want to be rude, tell them to go away in a rather ruder manner, in the lingo of that particular country.
What was likeable about them?
Oh, I just think that they were human beings. The soldier, British soldier, will always look at people as being human beings. They were crafty, and we were alert to their little ways and that sort of thing. And if they tried to pull the wool over your eyes, you were fairly aware of it, and you'd deal with it in a good-humoured way. And there was never any, not to my knowledge, never any nastiness from the normal general Palestinian Arab.
In what way did they try to pull the wool over your eyes?
I think when they were trying to, from my point of view anyway, from passing through the road, along the road, they wanted to go from A to B, and we were in between them, the two points they wanted to get to, and during your search, stop and search and say who you are, they probably come out with a fib or two to try and get through. But they were not dangerous in that sense. We had no trouble in that sense, not to my knowledge anyway. I'll tell you a little story, which is a light-hearted part of it. Being the MT drivers, all forms of transport would be passing through the area that we were stationary in, and being our job to search at the checkpoints coming in and out, were their methods of transport in those days was donkeys, of course, very heavily laden. I think you still see it now if you look at some of the films that come on. Forms of motor transport, very heavily laden, particularly with citrus fruits, oranges, grapefruits, etc. And we were never so well stocked with oranges and grapefruits as after we'd done a search operation. So the driver would drive off, having given the okay to them to go, but very often a sack of oranges fell off the back of the lorry, ably helped by somebody.
Do you think that made the men bitter?
No. I think one or two ranted and raved, but they were just told to say, go on you go, on your way, and that was it.
But were the Arabs treated fairly by the soldiers, or was there any violence against them?
I think that the only places where if there was any harsh treatment was administered, might have been in what we call the caged areas, where the internees were gathered and who were suspects or proven bandits They might have been, but again, not to my knowledge.
Did you ever witness it?
No, never. No, no. Without doubt, never witnessed any cruelty to my mind ever.
What did you think of the work of the Palestine police? What was your relationship with them?
I think you have to remember that at that stage, being a very young soldier of insignificant rank, some of this higher political side wouldn't be apparent to me or to a number of my colleagues. So the Palestine police, as with the Arab nation and the Jewish nation, if you like, we got on all right with, because they were just another person to us, and except for the authority that they carried, I don't remember any upsets with them. I believe they might have been a bit harsher than the troops were with the dissidents, whichever side they were from.
What makes you think that?
I think I can only relate to that by referring to some of the history books that one's read since. And
but nothing firsthand?
Nothing firsthand, no, no.
Was it dangerous for you at all in Palestine? Were you ever shot at or mined?
There were some shooting, yes. There was some shooting from the hills from time to time. We had one senior officer killed and several casualties, and several people were awarded decorations for bravery during those operations. So I think if you say that several military medals were awarded, it will give some indication of the scale of the operation from time to time.
Were you ever in any shooting or explosions yourself?
Myself, never. No, no. Mine was a peaceful existence. I seem to still got by without being clobbered in any way, shape or form.
How was the senior officer killed?
This was in one of the operations against one of the Arab villages, and there were some bandits in there who shouldn't have been in the village, and they opened fire, and he was leading the operation, and he was killed, unfortunately.
What was his name?
Major Beaton, I think it was. Major Beaton. Yes, and he was commanding D Company, if I remember rightly.
What was the attitude of the Arabs towards the British presence and towards the presence of the soldiers? Were they hostile or friendly or indifferent or what?
I suppose it's a little bit between indifferent and hostile, isn't it? Because if your land is being occupied by another power, and they and it is their homeland, and they're trying to protect it, I suppose there must be a feeling of discontent of some form, wouldn't there?
Did they show hostility to you? Would they ever say, "Why don't you go home" or something?
Well, it's never said to me, never heard of it. No, I expect it was said. I think it might well have been said. But from my own personal recollections, nobody ever said to me, "Look, why don't you go off home? This is our country." But I think it was said, maybe from time to time.
Did you feel like an intruder there?
No, 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 no. No, not as a young soldier. No, it didn't enter our heads, I don't think. Don't think we felt intruders. I don't think it was the way we were brought up. We were sent out there to do the job, and that was all there was to it.
Did you have much to do with the Jews?
Not a lot. I can only remember the Jewish nation. I was on a little job in a place called Nathania, which is situated somewhere near Tel Aviv. And I was in this little military base, and I was again an MT driver. I was a Lance Corporal by that stage, and we used to have to go out on motor patrol at night and patrol the area to see that nothing amiss was going on. My only recollection of the Jews was the appalling conditions that they lived in their early days of landing in Palestine. On the outskirts of Nathania was several very, very shabby sort of areas of ghettos. But if you moved on into areas which were known as kibbutzes, if I remember rightly, when once they became established into a properly established kibbutz, there appeared to be a very organized life, true communal living, communal, however you pronounce it, living, in which everybody, whatever they did, the proceeds of the sales of citrus fruits or whatever they were making all went into a central fund, I believe, and they fed centrally. Their laundry was done centrally. They lived in little habitats were kept neat and tidy. The girls in particular looked very attractive to us in their little blue shorts and whatever.
Were you allowed to associate with the women from the population?
We were allowed a fair amount of freedom because our bases were always away from the main towns, whilst we were there, like Tulkarm, we were allowed into places like Haifa or Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv being the closest area, and Nathania had a little town that one could go into, and we used the cafes and places like that. And we weren't prevented from talking to them or anything like that. No.
Did it go any further?
In what way? Platonic friendships or...
Well, did people get married to members of the civilian population?
I can't recall or remember any of my unit marrying anybody out there of their two races, that is the Arabs or the Jews. Certainly not marriage, but the usual pursuits of the soldier looking for female company went on, and Tel Aviv and Haifa was the main places to, or even Jerusalem, were the places that they would go if they wanted that type of entertainment. But if I could sort of, I don't know if it's digressing or not, but in those days, it was drummed into you as a young soldier that if you went astray and then reported sick with venereal disease, it was a very serious offence, and it was not looked upon kindly at all. It was something in the army, again, that you couldn't keep private. Everybody got to know that you had got yourself, as they called it, a dose. And thereon you were a bit labelled with it. So from my own point of view, I'm human, the same as anybody else, but that frightened me so much that I stayed away from it. I kept very, very much away from that type of company and goings on.
Did you get many people in the unit disabled by VD in Palestine?
Not a lot, but there were the odd one or two. There's bound to be the odd one or two.
Did you like the Jews in Palestine?
As with the Arabs, absolutely no problem as far as I was concerned. We seemed to be able to talk to them. I think possibly, on reflection, they may have been a bit more truculent in their manner in some cases than the Arabs.
Can you give any example?
Not really. I think that it was just a question that you might have been doing something where they were involved, and you got this little bit of truculence probably from the odd character.
Did you enjoy your time in Palestine or not?
Oh yes, without doubt. I've often said throughout the whole of my career, the two places that I would have liked to have gone back to and seen, one was Palestine, and the other one, of course, was Ceylon, but that's looking ahead. But certainly Palestine, I thought, was a lovely country. I liked it. As an MT driver, of course, I saw probably more of it than a lot of the ordinary infantry of the line soldier, the company soldiers, because again, as an MT driver, I was required to, whatever the duty I was given, I was driving a six-wheel, 30-hundredweight monster at that time. And I was very often required to take the quartermaster into places like Sarafand, Haifa, Jerusalem, or wherever, for stores, transactions and that sort of thing. So I saw the country a lot. I was driving the 1500 weights as well, and you would be required to take a party to Jerusalem or right up to Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee, or down to the Dead Sea. So I saw it as a driver, and saw a lot more possibly than some of the other people.
Did you see much hostility between Jews and Arabs there?
I didn't know. No, it was there. It was obviously there. But from a personal thing, in point of fact, if I think about it, it makes me wonder why there was any hostility, because there was Arabs and Jews living in the same towns, in the same communities, like Nethanya, Palestine, in Palestine, Haifa, Jerusalem. They rub shoulders, don't they? As they do now, as they did then.
How did the Second World War begin to affect you in Palestine?
The Second World War, at the time when war was declared, I was in Sarafand attending a driver mechanics course, and war was declared. Nothing very special happened, except to say that whilst doing this course, suddenly we were told to go out and dig slit trenches, and we thought that was wrong because we were on a course, we weren't there to dig holes in the ground, whatever it was. Typical of the British soldier, of course. But we were told to stop belly aching and get on with it, which we did. And then life went on quite the same from the time that war was declared on September the 3rd, 1939, and for us in Palestine, right through to about July the following year, 1940, when Mussolini and the Italians decided to begin their advance in the Western Desert operations. Up until then, we rehearsed we did some training on a wartime basis. But if I could give you an example of what the training was like, it would give you an idea of how our higher brass were thinking. We went on to an exercise down in the area of the Dead Sea, And the whole of the training was based on relief in the trenches, as was carried out in the First World War. And these many years later, I am astounded that we weren't clobbered heavier than we ever were, because that was our mentality at that time, on a First World War basis.
So you were doing actual trench warfare training?
Yeah, that's how we trained, and that's what we were. That's what the training consisted of. And I think the only difference between the First World War days and then is we had motor transport and not horses. But other than that, it astounds me that we were able to stand up to what we were later to meet.
You actually went to the Western Desert, I think, in September 1940.
Yes, about then. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How did it actually happen?
The Italians, as probably everybody knows, began their advance down through the Western Desert. And they made an advance down to a place called Sidibarani. And the powers that be considered that they were getting a little bit dangerous, probably, and more forces were needed in the Western Desert to be prepared to stop this advance if it came about. And so within the political framework that goes on between the political and the military, certain units were called upon to move to the Western Desert. And we received our instructions on a certain day, I think it was in September 1940, that we were to proceed to the Western Desert and become part of the Western Desert force under then General Wavell. Again, because I was an MT driver, we took our transport, which by then was in a very, very worn out condition. It having been used by us in Palestine extensively for about 18 months by ourselves, and previous to us by the unit that we relieved, the Royal Scots. So the transport that we had was becoming very worn, but we had very good fitters, and our standard of maintenance on these vehicles was such that we were able to get them from Palestine to the Western Desert without too much bother. It was a long journey, tiring one, but it was our first experience of how to drive properly in convoy.
How is that?
What, in convoy?
Spaced out?
Say again?
By spacing the vehicle.
Oh, yes,
out.
Yes, convoy, yes. You were required...